grade one class, it was a French immersion class that one of my sons was in, and the teacher was leaving, and another parent and I wanted to put something together from the students, her precious little students, our children, and present it to her. So we took over a class, asked if we could take over a partial class so we could do some taping of them, which she didn't know about. She borrowed a video cam or a camcorder, and we went into the classroom and threw together, in our unprofessional way, something that we could pass on to the teacher from the students. Everything was going wrong. I was completely in sort of a state of, this is not working. Now what? Now what do we do? And she was also in that state. And I left the room for a minute. Her camera falls almost to the floor, and all the kids sort of break out unison in singing. So at least we got that. So then what happened was, we were going over what we had taped and what we had taped visually and audio afterwards in a private little room at the school, and both of us were blown away. It was nothing at all what our mind was remembering as the horrible mess we thought we were creating. It, when we viewed it and listened to the children, it blew us away, and it was a perfect gift for her, and we just cracked up laughing. It was hilarious. So when you say that, that's very, very believable, Lisa. Your fear makes you your judge yourself. Honey, you were fine, Deb. Well, it probably would do some real rewarding healing if I did listen to it. So I'll let Doug, how are you doing there? We might be running up to 5 minutes. But does anybody have any announcements while I'm holding the mic here? You're on? Okay, here you go. I'm passing the mic to you.
Okay, thank you, Deborah. That was a wonderful intro. And I'm a little bit discombobulated this afternoon, folks, and kind of rushing to get things together. It's been an interesting day, to say the least. What we have been doing here for the last couple of months, I guess now, in this slot on Sunday afternoons, is reading and commenting and discussing the Urtext version of A Course in Miracles with the shorthand notes version amalgamated with it. So we have both these two earliest versions of the Course together in one document, for which the link has been posted for those who want to see it online. And last week we finished chapter one. Chapter 1 in the combined Urtext notes version is, I think, 7 times longer than it is in the Foundation version. There's a vast amount of material that ended up being edited out over the years. Now, as we went through that week by week, an average, I think, of 4 or 5 pages per week, a number of people commented that they wanted to go back and redo previous material or go over material again, because I suppose the material for most people was brand new. They'd never seen it before. And it really does bear a second look. And so as we've reached now, the other thing that I would like to really thank everybody for is, in this process of going over it literally line by line and hearing a great deal of input from many people over the weeks, I've learned a lot about this material that I didn't know when we first started. And there's a number of sections in the early material where my only answer to a question could be, I don't know, where I think now some of us do know and could offer some more insight into what some of those passages mean. So as we reached the end of chapter 1 last week, it occurred to me that it might be an idea to go back and start it again, because we certainly could do it again and do it much better. And we can also, of course, proceed on to chapter 2, which also has a good deal of material that many people have never seen before. And what I would like to do right now is get some feedback from those who are present, though I realize many of the regulars are not today present. I understand you have a football game happening in the U.S. that could be influencing some of our people. So I would like to, get some comments. Thank you, Lisa, as to whether people would prefer to go back and start Chapter 1 again or proceed on to Chapter 2. I'm quite happy to go either way, but I want to know what, if there's a consensus here, what it might be. Lisa, you have your hand up. Here's the mic.
I just want to preface this with, I'm fine either way. I'll go with whatever. Whatever's supposed to happen will happen. But I would like to point out that I myself have been a bit of a perfectionist in my life, and so in doing, go back, and there's a lot of material that none of us have seen before or read before, because it's all coming from like the parts of Helen's notes that are not in the other version. And so, I think just going through it and allowing all of it to be in its newness, and then to go back through it again, do the whole thing again, would be cool. Because in a sense, we also are recording it, and so we would have that. But, it doesn't matter to me either way. I'm totally, I'm not committed to a result here. I just thought that, you can go over and over and over and over infinitum and not get through the book, because there's so many parts. Or you could do each section more than once and then move on. That could be, since it's fresh in people's minds, that could be good too. I know this last thing I'll say is actually, that sounds good to me too, because at night, Deborah and I have read sections where we would take turns, and I will read, and then at the same section, and then she would read, and even Lee Flynn, and so all three of us would do it, and we would just read it and, go over it, and Jordan and I were doing that as well. We're reading it, and taking turns, and last night we did that too. And it's very helpful, because the first time you read it through, so much is coming to you. And then the second time you hear it from someone else. So like I said, it's either way. Definitely. I really don't care. I really don't. I just love doing it. And wherever I'm led is perfect for me. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I would take that as a firm, decisive, undecided. All right. Thank you. Sweet Dreams, you have your hand up. Here's the mic.
Hey, Doug, Lisa, and all you guys. What I think is that since I read the Urtext before, but it was the one that the Endeavor Academy has on their website, and I actually downloaded and read through it some time ago. Lynn, thank you. But I'm really familiar with the Foundation course and have read that, several times. So now that we've been going through it with Helen's, there's a battle going on behind me. Aliens and monsters and things. Anyway, so I'll put my hand over the mic. So personally, I'm just fascinated by reading it along with the notes, and I really, I'm just kind of blown away by it, Doug. So personally, I'd like to go back and read that again, just because the first time through it was just really, really exciting for me. So that's my thoughts, and that's monsters and creatures being killed. So anyway, I'll talk to you guys. I'm giving up the mic.
Okay, unless I missed somebody's typing, I see one undecided and two go back to the beginning, which would be my preference, all things being equal. Which looks like go back. Deborah, here's the microphone.
For myself, I get really keen and excited about going forward and into the new material, yet I know only too well the value of going over something repeatedly or before moving on. It just can come so much clearer. And I have been going through so many shifts as a result of being specifically in this room and working on reading through material and with others present and like reading along or even just being here in that space to allow everything to come into it and that the meanings come up. So I can see the benefit of both. I get overly excited about going forward, but I mean, whatever the decision is, I'm cool with that one myself. So here's the mic.
Okay, your hand's still up. Do you know your hand's up? Do you want to say something more? All right, it's just my screen showing your hand's up. Okay. Now, one other thing. This week I have been preparing a new file for us to read that actually includes the first 8 chapters, whereas the one we're working on includes only 2. And it also has some additional subheadings entered where the topic makes a shift. So it's easier to tell when one topic is finished and another topic begins, and also easier to find particular topics because they're labeled. And I am just looking now for the URL for that new file, which I'm going to suggest we take a look at, and if it's workable, we work with that. We can always go back to the old one if we have any difficulties with this new one. And I will have it in 1 or 2 here. HTML versions, notes, text. This is the one I sent you last night. Deborah, do you have that link? I'm looking for it here. I'm looking for it. And I'm not quickly finding it for some reason. Where did I put it? It'll be on Skype, yeah. 1 plus 2. Oh, I know, I should have been getting ready to do this an hour ago. And because of a variety of, oh, there it is, found it. Okay, so, that would be the workbook daily reading calendar you just posted, Deborah, not the original dictation text. Don't should on yourself, Doug. Oh, I should on myself all the time, Lisa. I'm a master at shooting on myself. Okay, so we want to take that and that and glue them together, and this should work. Copy. Paste. There it is. Okay, I'm going to post it. Oopsie! No. That actually came out wrong. We need that one, and we need that one. And with that modified, there it is. Okay, got it. Here it is. Okay. Now this is basically the same material as before, except there's 8 chapters instead of just 2, and there's some additional subheadings, and it's not indexed by page the way it was before. And it's got a number of minor error corrections built in. Okay, is anybody able to get that up? Is it working? Ignore what I sent, folks. Yeah. Okay. Control F. I'm going to post it again.
Doug, you've dropped your mic somehow there.
Okay, thank you. Okay. It works. All right. So, now that URL is just too long to read out loud for those on the radio. And hopefully by next week I will have something short and sweet I can read to you. In the meantime, you're going to have to read it off the board. Okay, so we're going to go back and start with chapter 1, section 1. And you'll notice on the left-hand side of that URL when it loads, there's a table of contents listed by section. And also the file begins with a table of contents at the start. And we'll go right to section 1, chapter 1 rather, section A, introduction. No, my website is not database driven. I would really like to hire a database as a driver, but it's simply driven by my whim. Week by week, month by month, year by year, it grows as new stuff becomes available, and I try to figure out where to glue it in, which is not the best way in the world to build a website that contains something approximating 10 gigabytes of material now. But that's what it is until it becomes something else. All right, Deborah, I will invite you to begin reading T1A, Introduction. Here's the mic.
Okay, Doug, I've got a printout here, actually, with a new font, so I'm going to use that, and I think it's the right material, as far as I understand. The only thing I don't know is what page we're starting on. It doesn't show up right on this page, but I'm sure the next time it comes to a page break, I'll be able to pick it up then, unless you have it there. It is page 1? Okay. I'm going to put this down here then, page 1, and put the link out with everything on it. Here we go. Copy and paste it in here. So here you go, folks. Everything's on it together. So, T1A1-N1, so this is some notes. You will see miracles through your hands through me. Jesus, thank you for the reminder. I like to start these sessions usually with addressing specifically that. You will see miracles through your hands through me. So that's, how does that go now? Oh my gosh. Help me to perform whatever miracles you want of me today. I wanted to put that request out there. Hi, Jordan. And also, Lord, heal me. And now, oh, Doug, here you go. You want to say something, too?
Well, for years, many people have been told and heard the story that the course began when Helen heard the words, "This is a Course in Miracles, please take note." I wasn't the only one to be astonished on looking at the first page where the course begins and to see that the first line is not that at all. The first line is, "You will see miracles through your hands, through me." A magnificently beautiful introduction to the course. In the Ur text, it was moved down, but preserved, moved down into the first paragraph. So we're going to be reading it again as we read the first paragraph. And to it was added what Deborah just read. "Help me to perform whatever miracles you want of me today." You should begin each day with the prayer, "Help me to perform whatever miracles you want of me today." Wow. All right. Deborah, here's the mic.
So I'll start again. "You will see miracles through your hands, through me." T1A1. It is crucial to say first that this is a required course. Only the time you take it is voluntary. Free will does not mean that you establish the curriculum. It means only that you can elect what to take when. It is just because you are not ready to do what you should elect to do that time exists at all. Parenthesis, "You will see miracles through your hands, through me." You should begin each day with the prayer, "Help me to perform whatever miracles you want of me today." Close parenthesis. Here you go, Doug.
I just want to draw attention to several what I think are really, really foundational principles here. It is just because you are not ready to do what you should elect to do that time exists at all. Elect means choose. Exercise an option. Make a choice among alternatives. And we're many times told in the course that we could wake up in an instant, and I don't doubt for a moment that's true. Well, why don't we wake up in an instant if we could? In some way, we're not ready, we're being told here. And it's because we're not ready to do what we would be well advised to elect to do and what we could choose to do that time exists at all. So it is for our readiness and because of our unreadiness that time exists in our perception at all. It's there to help us make that decision that we clearly haven't made, or we wouldn't be experiencing ourselves here in time. So free will doesn't mean that you establish the curriculum. We don't get to elect what the curriculum is, but we get to choose when. Not if, we're told later on, but when we're going to take it. Time is there to help us get ready, and the course is here to help speed up or to facilitate the celestial speed up so that we are encouraged and facilitated in making that choice sooner than later for our own and everyone else's benefit. And then that lovely, lovely line, "Begin each day with the prayer, help me to perform whatever miracles you want of me today." And that ends the notes and Urtext introduction. The familiar words, "Nothing real exists, nothing real is threatened, nothing unreal exists," were added much later. This is how it originally began. And we get into the principles of miracles, which runs something like 30 pages here, where in the Foundation version it runs, I think, 3. Okay, Deborah, here you go.
I wanted to toss out here with what it was saying about that we could elect to do what we wanted to at a time. That did have a requirement also in there that we, in doing lessons, we only did one a day. So I wanted to say that, and when I did the lessons with the Course in Miracles, I took a long time to do them. I took a lot of years to go through them the first time. And it was very, very specifically to the way I process anything in my life. So I would take in until I was saturated, and then I would get a clear message inside to move forward, and so pick up the lessons again and commence forward. But not repeating, I never repeated. I never felt the need to repeat again a lesson before I move on to the next one. But it literally took me years. And the next time, or when I was finished them, I had an incredible occurrence happening. But then the next time I did the lessons, and I did them once more, it took me just a wee bit, a few days over a year, so they went all incredibly differently. And so that was just sort of what I wanted to say about it. It is a curriculum that we can feel free to go with that flow of streamlining it that fits our own way of learning and how we can possibly learn best. So I'll go on to the reading. Doug, oh, here you go.
Oh, I think that's really significant, Deborah, what you shared there. The idea of readiness and individual choice indicates that every one of us is at a different stage of readiness, and the day or the hour when any one of us makes the choice will vary. When later on we read that the curriculum is individualized, yet it's a course that everyone must take, I don't think we have a contradiction there so much as it is a curriculum everyone must learn. The universal experience of God's love and the sharing of God's love, but it's individualized because that universal curriculum is going to manifest itself or materialize itself in the experience of each individual uniquely. And Jesus is tuned in to us and knows what lesson to deliver at what time and what we're ready for. And when we become impatient with brothers because they're not getting it, the stuff we got 5 years ago, remember that Jesus got it 2,000 years ago, and he's been patient with us. And his call is for us to be patient with each other and respect the free will of each one of us to choose the moment of our own readiness. Jesus will exhort, encourage, provide opportunities, invite, attract, but he will not bulldoze our free will. He will not coerce. He will not force. He will not twist arms. And remarkably, he doesn't get impatient because he knows, quote, the script is written, unquote. He knows how the story ends. And how many pages we want to write between now and the last chapter doesn't matter in eternity. It only matters in terms of our own inconvenience in the moment. Yeah, it's not for me to judge another's progress. It's absolutely not. Much as I'm tempted to and sometimes succumb to the temptation, I'm quite incapable of judging another's progress. Yet Jesus is absolutely capable of judging that process, and Jesus alone can judge it correctly. Where he wants me to help somebody, he'll tell me. It's not for me to decide who needs my help when. It's for him. He knows. He knows what help I need, and he brings it to me when I'm ready for it. And he knows when each of us can be helpful to another, and will let us know that also. And with the workbook, you know, one a day, no more than one a day, it doesn't say you have to do at least one a day. And I don't actually know of anybody who's ever completed the whole workbook in 365 days the first time round. Now, when we work here on Pal Talk with things like evening reflections and the daily workbook reading, yes, we will hear each lesson one per day for every day we're there all year, but to go through it and really work each lesson fully for a whole day. I think the shortest time I've ever known anyone to really do that was 14 months. I went through it actually in a year the first time, but there were days when it was just a blur. I didn't really do the lesson. I looked at the lesson. Anyways, that brings us to section B, Principles of Miracles. And again, if anybody, maybe not again, I didn't say this yet today. If anybody has any questions, feel free to type them. I'm not always watching the board closely. But if you type in capital letters, question, I'll probably see it. If you have a mic and want to comment or make a question, stick your hand up and we'll get to you as soon as we can. So here is the mic, Deborah.
Okay, T1B1. The first thing to remember about miracles is that there is no order of difficulty among them. One is not harder or bigger than another. They are all the same. T1B2. Miracles do not matter. They are quite unimportant. T1B3A. They occur naturally as an expression of love. The real miracle is the love that inspires them. In this sense, everything that comes from love is a miracle. Here you go, Doug.
Okay. Miracles don't matter. They're quite unimportant. What really matters, what's really important and eternal, is the love that inspires them. Now, this miracles do not matter will be explained more thoroughly later on in terms of miracles being a function of space and time, not existing in eternity and not being eternal in their own right. They're corrective devices for undoing, which we'll learn in the next few pages. But what I really like is that everything that comes from love is a miracle, in that sense, that the real miracle is the love that inspires them, the real stepping out of space and time, the real transcendence of the physical laws, the real touching of eternity is the love which inspires every real miracle. Lisa, you've got your hand up. Here you go.
Doug, I love your introduction to me. I was listening to see if you were going to say what I was going to say. But in the miracles do not matter, they are quite unimportant. They occur naturally as an expression of love. What I found so key about that is my tendency before to make miracles special. And in doing so, in making something special, not understanding it truly, by making it special, I, in a sense, held it as, by definition, as something that was a freak instance, something that didn't happen all the time, something that only certain people can do, something that only I can do at certain times, and on and on. And by doing that, placing unconscious limits on the miracle. And so in the awareness that miracles do not matter, they are quite unimportant, we learn to expect the miracle. And that realize that when a miracle does not happen, something has gone wrong. You know, we are believing something that is not true. We are suffering needlessly. And the miracle is just the return to the awareness of the true state of love, you know. And so that really is, in and of itself, so important to not make it something unattainable in the mind, not make it because it's funny, you know, that's what I did, you know, like, oh, the miracle, the miracle, you know, and miracle is the natural state. So thanks for letting me share.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you. Lynn, did you have something you wanted to say there? I saw your hand up. And while I'm waiting for a response, I was just thinking as you were speaking, Lisa, I remember as a child in a Protestant church listening to stories from the New Testament about Jesus' miracles and raising a question about, well, how come we don't see any miracles around here? You know, Jesus is meeting people who are sick and telling them to take up their beds and walk. I haven't seen anybody do that. And I was told in very somber tones that the age of miracles is past. And I actually almost believed that until I actually read the New Testament. And then I realized, no. The awareness of miracles may be past, but the age isn't. I mean, Jesus does say that greater things than these ye shall do in my name. And here we're being told that miracles occur naturally, and later on we're told that if they're not happening, there's something wrong. And the whole idea that miracles should not be a part of everyday life experience, the age of miracles is past, is, I don't think, correct. It's certainly not correct in my experience. Yet it's a common teaching in Christianity and in some core circles who deny that miracles are anything more than mental processes and they don't have any effect on the world, and in fact God doesn't even know about the world. Miracles occur naturally as an expression of love. Yes. Anyways, Deborah, here's the mic.
For everyone who has recently come into the room, I've just posted the list for you, and Lynn's hand is up again, so Doug, I'm just going to pass the mic on to Lynn. That meant go ahead, Lynn.
I was having trouble with the mic. what I was going to say is that because miracles are expressions of love, and every miracle is maximal, then it is only natural that as we continue to learn and grow and see, you know, what it is that Jesus is telling us to do and how we should be thinking about things and living our lives, then we do become more loving and maximally loving, so that the miracles are something that happens naturally, that happens all the time. And gosh, who knows what can happen if you are doing that regularly all the time. So, you know, just even trying to remember that, you know, what your work that you need to be doing daily, you know, really is just loving and expressing love, and you know, working to remove the blocks to the knowledge of love's presence. Those are the things that actually cause the miracle to be, and it can be healing, it can be enlightening, it can change, you know, the world around you, because that is what actual love does. So, you know, that's, I think, you know, we're right on reading this. This is perfect for us right now.
Thank you, Lynn. Yes, I think that's very well put. For those who have just come in, we're we're doing a reading here of a document that includes both the urtext and the shorthand notebooks, where material in the shorthand notes is significantly different than the urtext. I've combined them. And that URL I just posted will display the first 8 chapters of that document from which we are reading and commenting today. Link for radio listeners. That's a long link to read, Deborah. You can get the first 2 chapters, radio listeners, at www.miraclesinactionpress.com. Click down to Scholar's Toolbox twice, and then down to the bottom of the Scholar's Toolbox menu, I think it's option 13, which will bring up a file with the first 2 chapters. I don't have this file on the menu yet. I've been a bit distracted today and didn't get it there. So if you want the full URL, you've got to see it on the board. And we are at T1B3B, explaining the principle about miracles occur naturally as an expression of love. And here you go, Deborah.
This explains the first point related to the lack of order. All expressions of love are maximal. T1B3B-N1, so this is notes, parentheses, breaking communication by thinking it's cute. You are not wrong. It diverts your attention. That's T1B3B-N2, that's true. And then into T1B3B-N3, of course it's true, and I'm really glad you get the idea. I'm not angry when this kind of thing happens, but the lesson deteriorates under lack of focus. Close parentheses. T1B3B-N4, please read these 3 points, parentheses, with corollaries. As often as you can today, because there may be a quiz this evening. This is merely to introduce structure if it is needed. It is not to frighten you. Here you go, Doug.
I'm really struck here by Jesus' gentleness in dealing with Helen's difficulties in the early weeks of scribing. Breaking communication. And it's interesting that she spells it breaking as in breaking an automobile, as opposed to breaking as in terms of breaking a stick. Breaking communication by thinking it's cute. She thought these first 3 lines were cute. You're not wrong, he says, but it diverts your attention. Helen responds, that's true. Jesus replies, of course it's true, and I'm really glad you get the idea. And goes on to say, I'm not angry when this kind of thing happens, but the lesson deteriorates under lack of focus. And I'd like to draw attention to that idea of lack of focus. Later on in the course, he explains that one of the principal reasons for writing this down and getting it written down isn't that the information isn't accessible to us directly from the Holy Spirit, but that many of us are at a state of readiness where we have a hard time focusing on that inner voice, and having it on the printed page helps us to minimize distractions and focus on the message, which focuses us on the inner teacher. It's not that the words themselves contain some kind of magic or a truth that is inaccessible to human beings otherwise, but that the reading of the book is a tool, a teaching aid, to help us focus our attention on the Word of God, which also focuses our attention on the inner teacher, who will use these words as each of us, in each hour, in each minute we read them, are ready to hear and draw attention to those words that we're ready for, while ignoring those that we're not ready for. And I don't know if anybody else has experienced this, but in the 40-odd times I've read through the Course, in every single time, and it's not for a lack of familiarity with the words, I have learned things, seen things, and understood things I never even suspected were in there before. And I've seen very familiar things that I thought I understood being revealed to me in entirely new ways. And the explanation I offer is not that the words of the Course changed, but that I wasn't the same person this time reading it as I was last time reading it. My readiness was different, so the Holy Spirit was able to use different words to make different points to me based on my individual curriculum learning needs and my individual readiness. And this also explains, I think, one of the reasons why 12 of us can get into a room reading the Course and we can walk out with 14 different understandings of what it was we just read, though we all read the same words, that we're all in different positions. And in the course of our get-together in the evening reading the Course, two of us have had big shifts. So what we read when we went in the room isn't what we understand as we leave the room, because we've learned something in between. Which also, I think, is should lead us to be cautious about saying to someone, oh no, your understanding of that is wrong. Well, it might be, but it might be less wrong than simply different. That the readiness of the two individuals is a little different, and what they need to take away today is different, and what they're getting from the Holy Spirit is different. Not that one is right and one is wrong, but that each is right for that person in that hour of that day. And Lisa, I see your hand again. And I haven't been reading the board, so I will while Lisa's speaking here.
Well, there's something that I saw when you were sharing and we read this, was that, you know, there are two ways to approach the Course. And one is from an analytical, intelligent way, you know, the words at face value and literally without meaning. And the other is to approach the Course as you're being taught to approach life, which is to pray to know, what is it, the truth of what I'm supposed to see, you know, talk to me and through me, and have, you know, whatever it is that I'm supposed to know or read or hear revealed to me in that moment, knowing that it's just a continuance of my unlearning process with the Holy Spirit. And when I, there were only a few times where I went into the first and not the second, and I caught myself because I had fear that I wasn't going to understand something or whatever, and I realized that I was aligning with the ego when I was reading it, and I was not aligning with the Holy Spirit. And so, you know, the whole idea that the same man never steps in the same river twice is perfect, because the point is that we're constantly healing. We're constantly letting go of the filter in which we're looking. And as the student is ready, the teacher appears. And so as the student goes through each phase of readiness, new information, new awarenesses will happen. And so that's what's so perfect, and it's perfectly guided. And I could read the same thing over and over again and get something new every time because of what I'm supposed to get at that moment. You know, some people say, I'll say this last part, that don't underline the text, don't underline it. And I feel perfectly guided to underline it. And so I've tuned in more to underline only that which I'm guided to. And it helps me, especially in gatherings where I want to make sure I remember to go back to a certain point. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Lisa. As you were speaking about the river, I live on the banks of a river. I'm looking out the window at a mostly frozen river, and I realize not only can I not step in the same river twice, I can't look at the same river twice. When I look out the window, is it always the same world I see? Is it always the same river I see? No, it's not. Each instant, it's brand new, depending on what I bring to it, as well as what it is in itself, which we'll get to in the next paragraph. In the meantime, Teddy has his hand up. Here you go, Teddy.
Well, I'm just listening to what Doug said, and the truth is, and this is, it's sort of interesting for me, because there did come a point in time, and I was like, I got to tell you some of all things that have happened to me since I've started doing this, and like when the revelation started it all, there's been massive amounts of stuff, but there was one evening in particular when, I started to get this communication the same way I get them, when especially listening to music. And then all of a sudden, in the listening, it's like it takes me to the spot where, all sound sort of emanates from and the voice begins to speak to me. And, it was like it was Jesus telling me that he was done teaching me the course because I had got him. I had got the thought system. And I had gotten myself, and I no longer needed him as a teacher. And, that sort of sent me into shock for 3 days. And then, we had this thing about him still being the head of the atonement and me still getting directions, but it wasn't teaching the course anymore. But the truth is, it has yet to stop me from either hearing the course or picking up the course and learning something entirely new and not different in a sense, but like an explanation or an understanding that is right there for me, and that's constant. But in the nature of what Jesus is expressing, what he's actually saying is, and I don't think we've read it yet. It's when he says, free will does not mean you can elect the curriculum, but only the time you take a particular aspect of your curriculum. And when you're working on a different aspect or a different lesson in the curriculum, it's like when you read something, you're learning it in the context of the lesson that you're learning. And that's important because what he's saying is in the application, it's like within the context of what he's teaching you, the learning makes sense and is applicable. Without a context and without an application, it becomes just sort of like this meaningless thing that could be saying anything at all that you want. But within like specific periods or cycles of learning, it has a specific application to help you understand something so you never have to like learn that lesson again and it can be integrated. So when you're working on a lesson, you're designed to learn something new. Otherwise, you would have learned it already. And I think that's part of the reason why when we're so capable, when you finally learned how this thought system works, and you finally sort of like got the thought system and you're working with the Holy Spirit and you're knowing where everything is, it's like it's the application in the particular lesson that actually is what the learning is for. So you're learning the thought system, but the use of it, the application, is how this works. And since we're working on different things and we're not all working on the same lesson, there's something particular and individual that we can learn from any sort of thing, because all we're actually doing is uniting with the mind of Christ in our own mind and using that light to see what it is we need to understand so we can move along in our own lesson plan.
Well put, Teddy. And yes, we actually did read that part. It's the first paragraph. Free will does not mean that you can establish the curriculum. It means only that you can elect or choose what to take when. Yeah. Lisa, here is the microphone.
Wow, so something else just came out, you know, very in line with what we're saying, and it goes back to what we were just reading, where Jesus is prompting Helen to learn about how she thinks it's cute to break communication and divert her attention, and the necessity of vigilance and focus. And for me, the hugest lesson of all of my lessons has been to learn what the need for listening truly is. And listening truly is with my brother the same way as we're talking about with the literature. It is that really knowing that the Holy Spirit speaks to me and through me, through other people as well, and I ought to pay attention. And when I have judgment of something that's before me, that I shouldn't, you know, listen to that person, or I shouldn't, you know, read that book or something, that judgment is actually the same exact thing as what Jesus is saying to Helen about diverting attention and breaking communication. I actually would dissociate in that moment. And for me, listening was the hardest thing to do. And you can see why it would be, you know. And so even today, sometimes I have to close my eyes so I don't get, my attention doesn't get diverted. But in the listening to my brother, really in the listening to my brother, and I don't mean taking everything that my brother says literally, just like, you know, but hearing, really hearing my brother, you know, the meaning, the Holy Spirit, everything. And listening, I'll hear what I'm supposed to hear, guaranteed. And I will join with my brother. It's in love. I am joining with my brother by listening to my brother. And so that really really shot out to me right now. Just really, just a lot of beauty around that, you know, to realize that everybody before me is my teacher. Everybody, whether I interact with them, what I would consider, albeit briefly, it's a chance for the joining in every single encounter. So I just wanted to share that, how important it is that he's letting her know from the start, how important it is that she realize that she's the one who diverts her own attention, and how important it is to focus. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Lisa, again. And I think it's really appropriate to draw attention to that whole issue of focus, which is in T1B, 3B, N3 from the shorthand notes. I'm not angry when this kind of thing happens, when Helen gets distracted, but the lesson deteriorates under lack of focus. And I think, as you just explained, Lisa, our minds tend to wander, and the ego will try to divert us, and achieving focus on that inner teacher, which is available to all of us, is not something everybody knows how to do. And many of us have a great deal of difficulty doing it. And as Jesus says later, the value of the book and the written word, and the reason why he wants this written down, is that it helps us focus. Not that he can't communicate to us without a book. And I think of it like, I need to go across the city. I can walk, I can take a bus, I can drive my van, I can ride my bike. There's all sorts of different ways of getting there. One way of focusing is a book. Another way of focusing is meditation. And I'm sure there's yet other ways. And I'm sure some people don't need to do it. It's not that I need a bicycle to get across town. It's not that there's no other way to do it. It's that sometimes that is the most suitable way for me in my individualized readiness and curriculum to do it. And I'm trying to read the board and talk and think. That idea of focus, though, certainly I've found in my own life experience, focusing on Holy Scripture, and I consider A Course in Miracles to be amongst the greatest Holy Scripture ever put to paper, has been enormously helpful in the way I find a bicycle enormously helpful in getting around the city. It's not that it's necessary. It's not that it can't do it without it. It's that it's been very useful to me. It's what worked for me, which doesn't mean it's going to work for you. And Christopher, congratulations to you and your sister and your new niece or nephew. What wonderful news. Always so delightful when a new soul has entered this plane for new adventures. God bless you and God bless your nephew, and our prayers go out to you and your nephew and your sister, and hopefully she'll be back on her feet soon. And Malachi. Ah, Malachi. Welcome to planet Earth, Malachi. This brings us to 3C, T1B3C, which is about the thing in itself, and that is something I want to comment on, but I'll let you read that short two-sentence paragraph, Deborah, and then I will jump in.
Okay, and just before I read, I'll just quickly address a bit of what you asked there, Christopher, why the suffering. To me, it's a matter of putting judgment on pain, maybe exploring pain, what is pain, exploring it experientially, loosening the edges where a person finds pain, and looking at it that way rather than looking at it as suffering, changing in one's mind what exactly is going on. I can speak from first-hand experience of childbirth pain. I went into my first one of reading books that told me you will not feel any pain if you do what we say. A book written by a man, by the way. And I did exactly as this man said. And I had a very large for me baby coming out, and I felt excruciating pain, and I actually asked for some kind of painkiller during the process, and which really messes up a delivery process. So after that happened, the next child, which was a little bit larger, I decided to work with it differently with my mind and worked with the pain differently, and I was much more successful. And by the time the fourth came, what I considered as pain before was my resistance to what was happening. It would come up as something that I did not want when I resisted that motion of labor that was trying to propel this body from my body into the world. So when I realized that in the moment and let go and rode with that movement, then I had no pain. The pain just subsided, and I was with that flow of delivery, and it was phenomenal. And because I was finished having all my children at then, it sort of stopped me from experiencing it, all of that glory again. But it was just an amazing experience. So that's what I would offer, is to really take a look, help the person to look at it maybe differently, explore it. So whether that helps or not, I'll leave that with you and carry on reading here. So at T1B3C, this is why the thing in itself does not matter. The only thing that matters is the source, and this is far beyond human evaluation. Doug, here's the mic.
There it is, indeed. Okay, there's a footnote on thing in itself. And I was thinking about this as we were reading something up here before. This links into something that was already written. The miracle occurs naturally as an expression of love. The miracle itself does not matter. Right, that's it. Miracles in and of themselves do not matter. So what is the thing in itself? Now this relates, I believe, to a term that Helen would have been familiar with, and Bill would have been familiar with, and certainly Jesus would have been familiar with, this term, a thing in itself, which comes from Immanuel Kant's Critique of Pure Reason. And I'm just going to read the footnote. I think it is relevant, very relevant, in fact, to what Jesus is attempting to convey. The thing in itself is a term used in philosophy to refer to a noumenon, which is distinct from a phenomenon, in that while a phenomenon is sensed and experienced, the notion of a noumenon refers to an abstract essence or Platonic ideal independent of sensory perception. So thing in itself, independent of anything I see, hear, feel, or smell about the thing. The idea that there's some thingness out there independent of any of my senses or any data even I might have about it. A phenomenon is that which is perceived. A noumenon is the actual object that emits the phenomenon in question. The idea of a human evaluation is central to the distinction, with noumena being generally thought of as beyond what can be known by reason or experience. The paragraph certainly appears to be a reference to this philosophical question, probably a reference to Immanuel Kant's Critique of Pure Reason, in which the means by which knowledge is obtained, ordered, and evaluated are extensively explored. The distinction between the noumenon, or thing in itself, and the cause, or source, is made here in the Course, and is one which Kant's work also addresses. Okay, later on, Jesus will have a lot to say about cause and effect, and the difference between a source and a consequence or outcome. The source cause would be the thing in itself, which is beyond sensory data processing, whereas the effect or outcome is all that's available to sensory perception and data processing. Yet it's that cause or source that is all important, and it's what can't be seen with the physical eye but can be seen with the spiritual eye. And I think that is what we're being introduced here. And I think it is a concept Helen would actually have been quite familiar with. And so when she heard those terms, those words, thing in itself, she'd know exactly what Jesus was talking about, and I think that's exactly what he was talking about. The thing in itself, or the miracle, doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is the source, which is that love, which is far beyond human evaluation. Okay. Teddy has his hand up. Here you go, Teddy.
Yeah, you know, I just read this line, and, you know, like, I am always amazed. I am just always amazed at the wisdom of Jesus in providing answers for questions that have yet to come up from what was going to occur with the Course. There's not a single question that I've heard people ask that he doesn't deal with prior to them asking about it. And this is one of them. You know, it's like it, what he's saying is the only thing that matters is the source. And that is far beyond human evaluation. Now, the interesting thing is, there are a ton of people who read this Course and attempt to extrapolate what they are in reality rather than doing the work through forgiveness to have the experience, then dedicate themselves to the plan for atonement. So they're attempting to make up in their minds an experience that they think is going to be their reality, rather than actually going through what is asked of them to go through. And it's just merely a way of attempting to control things and to play God and to like eliminate the fear. And what he's saying right here is, listen, and now I'm going to use source in a particular way. The only thing that matters is the source. And that's what he's talking about, the source of love. Now, the source of love is beyond human evaluation. What he's saying is, listen, it's not going to matter what you think. You're going to be wrong. Like anybody says, well, what he's really trying to say is we're God. Whatever you think, you're going to be wrong. And don't even go there. Like, don't even go there in your mind, because this is a distraction and you're going to be wrong. And the minute you go for that distraction, you've done the same thing you've always done, and literally you've attempted to usurp the power of God in making God in the image that you think would be least fearful for you, rather than dealing with the idea that you don't know what God is, you don't know what love is, and you don't know what anything is. So you go linear, extrapolate, and what's that then? You reduce and redact, and you wind up with something that you think you already know the answer to before you've actually even done the work to free your mind to have an experience to answer that would deal with the idea that you don't need to know that, and you can't know it. The other interesting thing about that statement is, if you read the Urantia, and I picked it up and I was reading, it's funny because I have your first eight chapters and the Urantia up on the same screen. I have a wide screen. So I have both of them up there and both open to the introduction, which is, you know, sort of interesting. It immediately says, listen, the human mind, it starts out by basically, I'm paraphrasing, the human mind is not prepared to understand some of the things we're going to talk about, because it can't know in the condition that it's in, and until you're sort of like, you know, evolved or gone beyond where you find yourself, like those answers are beyond your ability to even conceive of, so don't even bother. Like, don't even waste your time, because you're wrong. Just accept what we're saying. It's beyond your ability to evaluate, so don't even bother to evaluate it. So it's sort of like really interesting, and he says it right away. And there goes people say, well, what he's really trying to say is we're God. So when we're one, when in oneness, there's only one of us. There's not more than one of us, so we're really God. Like, what's the saying? Say, listen, man, you can't understand it. Give it up.
Thank you, Teddy. For everybody, and especially those who have just dropped in, I'm just going to remind people that we're reading from the original dictation of A Course in Miracles, which is a combination of the shorthand notes version and the urtext version, the two earliest versions of which we have copies. On the URL, which I'm going to post one more time, okay, I did manage to drop the mic again. This time I noticed, though. Okay, because I didn't explain it before, what you're looking at there on that URL, the red and blue numbers in the left are the urtext paragraph numbers, where the notes material adds a paragraph or more. There'll be an N1, N2, etc., attached onto the previous urtext number. The material in bold is from the shorthand notes and is not found in the urtext. The material in regular type is found in both in substantially the same form. And what I did not do here in this particular edition is make any note of really minor changes. The only significant differences are present. Wherever you see more than two or more question marks in a row, it means there's something illegible in the notes, something I can't read. And since Lee is here, I'm going to draw his attention to every one of those, because sometimes he can read things I can't. Footnotes indicate where in the notes those passages came from. They sometimes indicate biblical quotes, and they sometimes indicate other issues where the text was somewhat uncertain for one reason or another. And we are now still on the first page, also in line, speaking of pages, in square brackets with the first characters in red, you'll see T, bracket, and a numeral. That numeral represents the original Urtext manuscript page number. And this is for cross-referencing to the Urtext if one wishes to do so. And also gives us a capacity to specify searchable page numbers that are consistent across all copies. Okay. You're off to a bash. Yes, I think Lee has a football game to attend or something. I chased Lee out of the room. Yeah, well, sorry, Lee. You'll have another chance. Okay, so we're on to T1B3D. And Deborah, if you can pick it up from there. Here's the mic.
Okay, yeah, Lee said he had a football game to attend to. That good old football game. We're going with T1B3D. Parentheses, question and answer regarding first 3 points. Close parentheses. Question, Helen Schuckman. Would you regard this communication as a kind of miracle? And there was something missing out of there that couldn't be translated. Answer, you better read that now. There is nothing special or surprising about it at all. The one thing that happened was a universal miracle, which was the experience of intense love that you have felt. Don't get embarrassed by the idea of love. Embarrassment is only a form of fear, and actually a particularly dangerous form because it reflects egocentricity. T1B3D-N1. So this is notes. In parentheses, no, don't think of how Bill will find this fascinating either. I told you to reread them, and you did not. Close parentheses. T1B3D-N2. I am now. This is this nice little tidbits of communication going on between Jesus and Helen. T1B3E. Do not feel guilty about the fact that you are doubting this. Just reread them, and their truth will come to you. Like it. Just reread them, and their truth will come to you. The power of reading. I love you, and I am not afraid or embarrassed or doubtful. My strength will support you, so don't worry and leave the rest to me. T1B3E-N1. Doug, here's the mic.
Yeah, well, I see from the reactions on the board that others noticed this too. Don't feel guilty about the fact that you're doubting this. And that's good advice to anybody reading the course on any page. And you're reading something and you're scratching your head and saying, what? Just reread them and their truth will come to you. In this case, Jesus is referring to the first 3 miracle principles. And then he reassures Helen again. I love you, and I'm not afraid or embarrassed or doubtful. My strength, Jesus speaking in the first person, my strength will support you. So don't worry, and leave the rest to me. And for those who think that Helen wrote this, I would raise the question, whose strength do you think she was talking about? Okay, T1B3EN1, another excerpt from the notes here. Here you go, Deb.
Okay, did you find them there, Lee? You were looking for where we were reading. Just wanted to make sure that you're able to locate them on the left-hand column. So there's a column on the left-hand side, and it lists the chapters, and it'll list the sections. So if you click on chapter 1, because that's where we're in, and then if you click on, we are on page 1 still, as Doug says, then if you click on the B section, or just go to chapter 1 and then scroll down and take us right, go right down to T1B3E. And a dash N1 goes with that. Okay, so I'll carry on with the reading here. Do not run to Bill to tell him. There will be time, but don't disrupt things. I'll arrange the schedule. You have to do a lot today. Get dressed or you will be late. This typical older brother, yeah? But when you do see Bill, be sure to tell him how much he helped you through by giving you the right message, and don't bother with worrying about how you received it. That doesn't matter either. You were just afraid. Here you go, Doug.
Well, I find this line, and many like it, in the first couple of chapters really interesting. This is not part of the course. This was not intended to be, quote, part of the course. This is a private conversation between Helen and Jesus. But what is he saying to her? He's giving her specific guidance. You don't need to run to Bill. There will be time. Don't disrupt things. Don't lose your focus. What we're doing here needs your focus. And then he says, I'll arrange the schedule. I'll arrange the schedule. Jesus is prepared to, willing to, able to arrange the schedule if we don't disrupt things. What he's doing for Helen, he does for everybody who is prepared to not disrupt things. And then he goes on to more very specific guidance. You've got a lot to do today. Get dressed or you'll be late. In other words, dictation is done now, Helen. Put your pen down, get dressed. Get out the door or you'll be late. And when we're prepared to listen, I don't know about you, but I get instructions just like that fairly frequently. Oh, put that down, turn your attention here. Oh, but I want to do this because I'm all into it. No, you need to go do that. And generally speaking, later on, I find out why. Yeah, I did need to go do that, but I didn't know that. Something in me did. And I call that voice Jesus. And then in the next paragraph, but when you do see Bill, be sure to tell him how much he helped you through by giving you the right message. And don't bother with worrying about how you received it. That doesn't matter either. You were just afraid. And that leads me to something the Holy Spirit was niggling me about before this whole session began. And that is something I read many years ago, and I think it was by, I forget the name of the author, an inspirational author of self-help books, and he called it the Law of 255. And the Law of 255 is that somebody is 255 times more likely to tell you when they're annoyed with you than they are to tell you if they're pleased with you. How rarely we affirm others, and how frequently we are quick to draw attention to anything we judge negatively. And I was thinking actually about David Fishman and this magnificent facility called ACIM Gather that his devotion has brought into being over the years, and the many, many, many people who contribute so greatly to our sessions here on Sunday afternoons and so many other sessions, and how rarely it is that we turn and say, thank you, David. Thank you, everybody who has made this possible. And how quick we are, and how often we read somebody niggling, annoyed, I don't like that. I don't want to hear that. Do it different. Yet, if it were not all here, if so many people had not devoted so much energy with such devotion over such a long time, we would be doing something very different right now than what we're doing. And to the extent that we appreciate what it is we're able to do here, you know, direct thank you to all those who have made it possible, and in particular to David, whose night and day devotion to this channel has in fact made it possible, is really in order. And that's what Jesus is telling Helen here. Be sure you tell Bill how much he helped you. And I think that that's excellent advice to everybody and every day, to everyone we deal with. Be sure to tell them, our friends, our coworkers, our colleagues, how much we appreciate the contribution they have made, because it's really, really easy to not do that. Okay. This brings us to T1B3EN2. And Deborah has just posted the link again. And this would be the... This is actually halfway through page, manuscript page 2. Here's the mic, Deborah.
Okay, and yes, I want to echo Doug's thank you, Dove. It is such an amazing space that we can all meet in. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I can't say thank you enough. So T1B3E-N2, which is notes for a little bit. In cab, long discussion. No, it's wrong to think maybe Dave will be healed, but great fear here because I want to separate the next thought from Dave, who is dying in human terms, and Louis's hernia will be cured. Remember point one and reread now. Doug, go ahead.
Okay, just a quick context here. Those who have been through this material before will know this, but those who haven't, who's Dave and who's Louis? Dave was a friend of Helen's who was in the hospital terminally ill and who dies before the chapter is out. Louis is her husband, who was suffering from a hernia at the time, and Helen was praying for both their healing, but, as she expresses, experienced great fear because she didn't want to associate Dave's terminal illness with her husband's rather minor illness. And Jesus is saying, remember point one, there's no order of magnitude or difficulty in miracles. And telling her, go back and reread it now. Go back and reread. Go back and read. Go back and read. He's talking to her. And what does he say? Go read. Ah, interesting. There's a time and place for reading. Now, the next paragraph is how this material was reworded, same topic, in the urtext. The wording was changed, but the point survives. And here you go, Deborah. This is T1B3F.
Helen Schuckman, fearful in taxi about a communication which related Dave's healing and Jonathan's hernia. She thought it would be safer to dissociate the two. Instructions were, refer to point one and reread now. T1B4A, all miracles mean life, and God is the giver of life. He will direct you very specifically. Go ahead, Doug.
No, okay, this is partly for Christopher, I think. All miracles mean life, and God is the giver of life. And again, Christopher, congratulations on your new nephew, Malachi. No, he's not an illusion. He's a miracle. In the previous paragraph, we come across the name Jonathan, which might be a bit confusing. We were talking about Louis's hernia, and now we're talking about Jonathan's hernia. Jonathan and Louis are the same person. Helen sometimes refers to her husband by his Christian name, Louis, and sometimes she calls him Jonathan. And that's a topic that will be discussed in some detail as to why she does that. I also want to point out something I probably should have started with, that in chapter 1, we have something akin to a table of contents of the rest of the course, where numerous themes are mentioned in a line or two and then dropped for many pages, and then we'll come across entire chapters about that same theme. It's almost as if Jesus is saying, here's what I'm going to talk to you about, and lays out 100 points, and then one by one goes into detail, and as the text progresses, he draws on what he's already instructed us about and integrates that with a new idea, so that we see, in some sense, it's the same idea repeated again and again and again, but each time it's like the red thread is woven into a new ornate garment with additional colors and nuances and ideas, so that by the time we get to the end, we have a vast symphony of 1,000 instruments, and each instrument is introduced one by one, then each is elaborated upon one by one, and then they are progressively woven together into a magnificent whole. So we will see things mentioned again and again and again that are then dropped, and we go on to something else, but we'll come back to it, and we'll come back to it repeated times, and each time it's expanded and it's linked to related concepts to become part of the ultimate whole. Lisa, I see a little yellow hand beside your name. Here you go.
You just crack me up. A little yellow hand beside your name. Oh my God. Okay. Anyway, okay. What I wanted to say was, after you shared what you just shared, that throughout the course, Jesus does that, you know, elaborates more and more, coming from different angles, because that's how the ego structure is built and needs to be undone. You know, each person has the same feelings and the same basic core belief that is the foundation of the ego belief system, but in form, literally in form, all of the different thoughts are going different ways. This person has this experience, this understanding. That person has that experience, this understanding, and goes, you know, this person went to church, this person went to temple, this person, you know, on and on. This person had this experience, that understanding. This person had trauma, this person had depression. You know, and what's so awesome about this is that because he does elaborate, some people would say, and I've heard it many times, that, oh, he just repeats himself over and over again. Does he? You know, it's really amazing because it's never exactly the same, you know. So what's so perfect about it is that it goes back to, you know, the same man never steps in the same river twice. You know, the same message is stated perfectly in the way that the reader, the student, needs to hear it for the undoing of their particular way of believing what needs to be undone. You know, and how perfect is it that really, that really, you know, Jesus and the Holy Spirit meet the brother exactly where they are at all times, perfect, you know? And so even things that we don't even think we believe, that are blocking us from completely letting go of a core belief that's based on the belief in separation. For me, I'll read something and I'll get an aha, like, oh, wait, and it'll just shift everything, you know, it'll just shift everything, because, and the last thing I'll say is, for me, in my healing and the purification process, I will have one seeming obvious belief and a whole bunch of little ones kind of supporting it, and so the Holy Spirit will go and purify that using whatever material I'm guided to, or whatever people I'm guided to speak to, but there'll be some things holding it, you know, like a couple of roots in there, you know, just holding that in place. And from another angle I will get those pieces taken care of undoing, and then the whole thing just shifts. It just shifts, you know. So when all of a sudden the shift in perception, the aha, the oh my God, seems like it's immediate. It seems like it just happened. But what's so perfect about it is that all these little shifts in perception have come into play to make the whole thing. It's like kind of like Tetris, where the whole row clears. You know, the whole row clears, you know. So he's not repeating himself, but he is repeating himself in the way of, you know, meeting, you know, from every angle, you know. And I love what Teddy said before, because it's like holographic. This book in and of itself answers everything. It answers everything from every angle, you know, all the questions that would, you know, all the questions attached to the beliefs that need to be undone. So anyway, so thank you very much. Very, very good.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And I just wanted to tell Cynthia, we're probably going to not get to doing sex until next week. Stay tuned. Teddy, you have your hand up.
I hope you guys don't mind. I want to go backwards for a second and to the section we were reading on the last page. I just want to say something because it came up before, and it just while we were reading this other thing, it just dawned on me again to say it. And it may be true, and it may not be true, but, you know, like, it sometimes it all depends on the reading or, like, how you're seeing it or something. So he says, there is nothing special or surprising about this at all. And then he says, the one thing that happened was the universal miracle, which was the experience of intense love that you have felt. And she has the word one capitalized. Now, when we read that before, I just sort of found it interesting that she had it capitalized. And then I sort of like had this image in my head, where I got this sort of image of Jesus talking to her very specifically, because obviously what he's talking about is like she had this moment of revelation. And that was what he's saying. That was the universal miracle. So, you know, like I just had this idea that what he was actually referring to was a way in which Helen tried to express the experience. And I think he was sort of saying to her, like she said, oh, I had this thing happen, and it was like it was one thing. Like I had this experience of like one thing. Not like the one thing, but like she was attempting to describe an experience, and he's relating back to her, like, oh, that one thing that you had happen, you know, that was the universal it. That's it. That's the universal it. That's what this is about. I don't know. I could be way out of it, but like I read that, and it's just like said, oh, like, you know, it's a slightly different take on it.
Thanks, Teddy. And I think that that is an interesting nuance to that sentence in T1B3D. There's nothing special or surprising about this, miracles, at all. The one thing that happened was the universal miracle, which was the experience of intense love that you have felt. So the universal miracle is here related to the universal experience, what Helen felt. And she's being the association is being pointed out to her. And then don't get embarrassed by the idea of love. Embarrassment is only a form of egocentricity, etc., etc. Okay, we are now. We've got 17 minutes left. We can get through a few more paragraphs here, or considerably more discussion. Yeah, she didn't have a name for it yet. Right, Teddy. T1B4A, the fourth miracle principle in the Ur text. We've already done that one. We're now on to the second paragraph of that miracle principle, T1B4B. Deborah, are you still there?
I am. Thank you, Tony. I just asked Tony something in private, so I just wanted to thank him. T1B, 4B. Plan ahead is good advice in this world, where you should and must control and direct where you have accepted responsibility. But the universal plan is in more appropriate hands. You will know all you need to know, make no attempts to plan ahead in this respect. T1B5, Doug, here you go.
Yes, every line in here is so packed with meaning and significance. Plan ahead is good advice in this world where you should and must control and direct, where you have accepted responsibility. So what we're being told here is not ignore your responsibilities, don't pay your bills, don't feed your kids. No, we're not being told that. But we are being told there's a universal plan that is in more appropriate hands, i.e. not mine. Because I can control and direct where I have accepted responsibility. That's part of my curriculum. Where I've accepted responsibility for you, I need to plan to exercise my responsibility to you. And you, likewise, to me, where you have accepted responsibility for me. That establishes our brotherhood. That makes relationship possible. But there's a universal plan in more appropriate hands. And about that, you will know all you need to know and make no attempts to plan ahead in this respect. And yes, this is the need-to-know basis, Lisa, which is expanded later, and even a joke is made about the CIA and the idea that secret agents are only told what they need to know. And it's certainly been my experience that with divine guidance, that I'm told what I need to know, when I need to know it, and sometimes 5 minutes ahead of time, but often milliseconds ahead of time, simply simultaneously with when I need to know it, then I know it. The instructions are there. And I think the reason is very simple, that if the instructions were given to me in advance, my ego would go to work on them. I would accept or reject or modify or edit the instructions, and the result would be something other than the universal plan. It would be the universal plan as improved and enhanced by Doug Thompson. It wouldn't work. And so we're very explicitly told here, make no attempt to plan ahead in this respect. Which takes us to miracle principle number 5. Oh! And there's that little yellow hand behind Lisa's, beside Lisa's name again. Okay, here you go.
Hey, I know we're running low on time, so I'll quickly say, you know, that's really what comes back to that I'm here only to be truly helpful. I'm here to represent him who sent me, and I don't have to worry about what to say or what to do, because he who sent me will direct me. Being content to be wherever he wishes, knowing he goes there with me, and I'll be healed as I let him teach me to heal. And why that so speaks to me consistently was I have it on a little laminated card that was given to me, and it was like a treasure. Like, I was so afraid of losing this card because for a while it was something that I read before everything. I didn't say, oh, I wonder what I'm going to have to say. I didn't start telling myself stories about who I'm going to meet with. I didn't make contingency plans, you know, like, okay, well, if he says this, then I'll do this, or if she says that, I'll go this way. I didn't start telling myself stories out of fear about, you know, how am I supposed to show up. It was really important that I just completely let go and just trust, you know, and that was it. And that is key to get out of the way, you know, key, you know, to be truly, truly helpful. I cannot be in charge of it, you know. I really cannot possibly know what the other person needs for me to hear, a say, etc. So I just wanted to throw that in there. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And forgive my exchanging jokes about the color of your hand. All right, Deborah, we're on principle number 5, T1B5. This is the bottom of page 2, about the top of page 3 of the Urtex manuscript. And here's the mic.
Thank you. I've been finding it very distracting on what Axel is doing on the board by posting what is not being read, and I have asked him to cease doing so in private message, and he's not doing so. So if an administration could step in and help him to cease, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you. So I'm going to go ahead with B5. Miracles are habits and should be involuntary. They should not be under conscious control. Consciously selected miracles are usually misguided, and this will make the talent useless. T1B6. Miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong. We're switching into page 3 now. T1B7. Miracles are everyone's right, but purification is necessary first. Here you go, Doug.
Well, once again, this material is so incredibly packed. I've used the word dense before, which some people take exception to because it has other connotations. There is so much meaning in every word. We've just gone through three miracle principles in 30 seconds. Okay, miracles are habits. So they should be habitual and involuntary the way habitual behavior is involuntary. In other words, not calculated and premeditated, but simply habitual. They should not be under conscious control because consciously selected miracles are usually misguided, and this will make the talent useless. Now, initially this was written down, this will destroy the talent, and then it was corrected, changed to make the talent useless. And we had some considerable debate amongst a number of us over which reading was correct. And clearly a talent of the Son of God cannot be destroyed, but it can be rendered useless if misused. So I think useless here is correct, that the capacity to do miracles can never be destroyed. But by trying to use it for conscious or ego purposes can indeed render it useless. And then, miracles are natural, and when they're not occurring, something's wrong. Far be it from what I was told as a child by my pastor, that the age of miracles is past, don't expect them, they're not part of this world anymore. Miracles are natural, and when they're not occurring, something has gone wrong. And then, they're everyone's right, but purification is necessary first. And this theme of purification is major, will be addressed many, many, many times in subsequent pages. And I don't think I'm going to say anything more about it right now because we've only got 8 minutes left. And to even open the topic would require way more than that. Though if someone feels they have something succinct and quick to say, Lisa, there's your peachy little hand. Here you go.
This is unrelated to what you were saying, Doug. I just want to say this to the room real quick. I don't know if anybody knows this, but if it's distracting to you, somebody saying stuff in the room that, you know, by typing on the board that you do not want to see, if you right-click on their name and you click on ignore in the room, you won't see what they're saying. I just want to let you know that. So each person can kind of create their own environment. There you go.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I didn't know that either. We live and learn. Yeah, that's useful if somebody is... Okay. Good to know. Now we're on to number 8. Miracles are a form of healing. T1B8, top of page 3. Deborah, you've got 7 minutes left.
Shall I read, like, really fast? So here we go. Miracles are a form of healing. They supply a lack and are performed by those who have more for those who have less. T1B9. Miracles are a kind of exchange. Like all expressions of love, which are always miraculous in a true sense, the exchange reverses the physical laws. Doug, I see your hand. You know, something came up just very recently in one of these paragraphs to my mind when I was in training, I kept saying to my teacher, because it became very evident to me all the time, that what was coming into my mind, the messages, when people would talk to me, what was coming into my mind, I kept feeling like it's coming in backwards. It's backwards. Everything's happening backwards here. I'm not getting something here. I don't know what to do about it. I'm not getting it, but it certainly feels backwards to me. When we read A Course in Miracles, when I've been doing A Course in Miracles, everything starts to shift around in a different way. So I know I was really in backward motion with all of what I was intaking. So I'm passing the mic to you now.
Interesting observation, Deborah. Yeah, in the Foundation version, I'm not sure, I don't have it right in front of me right now on this miracle principle, what it says. But later on, this miracle principle is referred to and it's explained as temporarily have less and temporarily have more, because in heaven, all human skills and abilities are equally shared. But here on earth, temporarily, while we're here, one may have more than another. That's why one human can give to another, because one temporarily has something the other doesn't have or doesn't know he has. But that imbalance or differential is temporary and applies only to earth. It is definitely a temporary. Temporarily have more to those who temporarily have yes. Yeah. Which would be accurate and is later explained in some detail. Okay. There's that peachy little hand again. Here you go, Lisa.
Wow. So in reading this with you guys, we did that whole talk about purification, but there's something else that just popped out at me that I don't believe I've seen before, in that where it says miracles are everyone's right, but purification is necessary first. Realizing that miracles are a kind of exchange like all expressions of love, that love, the expressions of love are everyone's right, but purification is necessary first. And realizing, well, of course, because the thoughts need to be purified. If they're not wholly coming from love, they're coming from fear. You know, if it's not wholly coming from truth, they are a lie. And so love is complete and whole. Purification would be necessary for love to come through. I just saw that, you know, it's so interesting how that one line, miracles are everyone's right, but purification is necessary first. I mean, I've had so much other insight about, and now another piece. It's just beautiful. Of course, you know, of course. It's impossible to have, otherwise it would be conditional love, and conditional love is surely not the miracle. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And that is a really good insight, because miracles have already been equated with love. And just as miracles are everyone's right, love is everyone's right, but for the exchange to work properly, without inhibition and without interference, purification of the ego contamination, that's my interpretation in brackets, is necessary first. And we are now down to our last 2 minutes, and so I'm going to stop here, and we'll pick up next week at T1B9. And I would like to thank everyone again for your presence. And in case you weren't here when I said it before, David, thank you for your devotion to make this medium of exchange available to all of us who value it so much and derive so much from it. And this, you know, we wouldn't be doing this here tonight if not for you. And I know we don't often enough tell you that, and we're really, really quick to tell you when we're displeased with you. But, you know, the appreciation is deep and profound if infrequently expressed. And again, thank you all. And next week, same time, same station, God willing, we'll be here. And Deborah, you've got a little bit like a minute to say goodbye. Here's the mic.
I also want to thank you again, Dove, so that you're in the room right now, so that I know that you are hearing. And it's really extraordinary what you have put together here for us and offer and put so much time into. It blows me away. I mean, I just couldn't do it. I know that. And it's an amazing space. I call it the Om Room when I'm here working away with reading material and being with others. And everybody, I want to give appreciation to you for joining us in this space of in loveness. It's an amazing experience. So thank you very much. And I'll pass the mic on to where it's going next.
You're on.
Didn't Doug come on?
You're talking.
Oh my God, hello.
Hey there.
Thank you so much to Doug and to Deborah. Oh my goodness gracious. I'm so sorry that I missed you today. I had a class this morning at Unity, and it was all exciting and everything. And when I came home, I just crashed. I had to take a nap, so I apologize, Doug, for not calling you back.